time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and it's time for us to dive into another hour's worth of Michigan sports. We're going to start with the Detroit Lions, what happened with them last week, and what's going to happen with them coming into their matchup this weekend on Sunday. And then we'll be dipping into the college game, starting with the Michigan Wolverines, what things will look like for them coming out of the bye week and how they should handle their upcoming matchup later today. And then we'll pop on over, touch on the Spartans and what's happening up in East Lansing with Michigan State and how they should be looking for their game, their first game back after the bye week as well. Before we dip into the Tigers in a segment where things are going crazy in October. As we know, October baseball is just different and the Tigers are about to walk right into it. But before we do all of that, I'm doing absolutely fantastic as always. High school football was another great run last night out at Penfield as we saw them take on the Coldwater Cardinal. And then we're stacked with football today. Tons of great matchups. Michigan, Michigan State both back in action. So be excited to watch some good football there. The Detroit Red Wings are going to be back pretty soon here. And yeah, like I mentioned earlier, the Tigers won during the week to capture that AL wild card division or wild card series win, moving them on to the American League divisional series. So now that we've gotten through all of that, the Detroit Lions. Oh, don't forget, we'll get into our picks to end out the show as well, where you can play along and find out if you're able to pick games better than me. Last week, the Detroit Lions took on the Cleveland Browns at Ford Field, and the Lions had themselves a day. 7-7 after one, 20-7 at halftime in favor of the Lions, and then 20-10 after the third quarter, 34-10 at the end of the game. Looking at the leaders, Joe Flacco goes 16-34 for 184 yards and two interceptions. Quinshon Judkins had 21 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown. Isaiah Bond led receivers with three receptions for 58 yards. No sacks for the Browns, but Ronnie Hickman had nine tackles, four of them being solo. Meanwhile, on the flip side, Jared Goff goes 16-27 for 168 passing yards, two tutties and an interception. Jahmyr Gibbs leads things on the ground, 91 rushing yards on 15 carries and one tutty. Amon-Ra St. Brown had both the receiving touchdowns on seven receptions for 70 yards. Aiden Hutchinson picks up two sacks in this game, and Jack Campbell doing his thing in the tackling game. 11 tackles on the day, seven of them solo. The Lions won this game with 277 total yards, just one turnover in comparison to 249 yards and three turnovers for the Browns. They each had 16 first downs. They each had six penalties. The Browns picked up 44 yards on those penalties, while just 35 for the Lions. Both of them had 14 third down opportunities. The Lions converted on six of them, while the Browns just three. The Browns go one for one on fourth down, while the ever so, aggressive Lions were 0-1 on fourth down. The Lions did go 3-for-3 in the red zone, which is the key place to be successful. You got to put points on the board. They did that. The Browns went 1-for-2. Looking at the scores, obviously Jahmyr Gibbs got things started with that 8-yard rush. That was shortly after Quinshon Judkins scored his 1-yard touchdown run. Jake Bates got a field goal at the start of the second quarter. Amon-Ra St. Brown comes back with a 2-yard touchdown pass before another Bates field goal heading into halftime. And then coming out, Schmeich gets a field goal for the Browns, 6:44 left in the third. Then you got a touchdown from Khalif Raymond on a 65-yard punt return and another Amon-Ra St. Brown touchdown catch in the fourth quarter to close things out for the Lions. This is great for them, especially in terms of getting back into things in the NFC North, keeping that record looking fantastic for them. I believe that they're first now in the NFC North with that 3-1 record. Obviously, the Packers have that tie to the Cowboys, and the Packers lost to the Cleveland Browns 13-10. So this is a huge leg up for the Lions, who, I mean, looked kind of eerie in their one loss to the Packers. That looked like things could be completely different for them this year, and they've bounced back since that loss. They're 2-0 at home, 1-1 on the road, 3-1 on the season, and it seems like they found their groove on the offensive end. Their offense had a really tough time getting going up at Lambeau Field against Green Bay, which, granted, it's hard for any offense to get going up at Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers, especially when you add Micah Parsons to that already illustrious defense. But Jared Goff and the rest of this offense have found a way to find their magic, and they're absolutely running with it. They're not concerned anymore with how they're going to put points on the board. They're more concerned with stopping them. And after last week, you can't tell me that they didn't put together a great defensive scheme to stop the Browns, who, granted, it's not hard to stop the Browns, who are now moving to Dylan Gabriel for quarterback. But still, you have to go out and do it. The Packers struggle with it. The Lions did not. And they made it look like it should have been light work for anyone who steps on the field against the Browns. It's something, honestly, that Lions fans should be extremely happy to see. Now, October 5th, tomorrow, 4:25 p.m. on Fox, the Lions, 3-1 heading into this game, will take on the Bengals, who are 2-2, but they're undefeated at home. They've won their only game at home. Obviously, there's a 76.3% chance for the Lions to win this game, while just a 23.5% chance for the Bengals. And, of course, that remaining percent is for that unlikely chance of a tie, like you saw with the Packers and Cowboys. The Lions are 10.5-point favorites in this game. The over-under sits at 49.5, negative 600 on the money line for those Lions, plus 400 for the Bengals. I mean, looking at the season leaders for the Bengals, Jake Browning, obviously coming in relief for Joe Burrow, who was hurt earlier this year, is 54 of 84 for 506 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Chase Brown pacing things on the ground as expected, 57 carries for 133 yards and a tutty. Ja'Marr Chase, shocker, leading receiver, 26 receptions for 264 yards and a touchdown. Trey Hendrickson has 2 sacks to lead their team. That's 2 behind Aiden Hutchinson, who has 4. And then Jordan Battle has 32 tackles from the safety position, which I don't think you ever want your safeties to be leading your team in tackles. Looking at some significant injuries, Khalil Dorsey is still questionable with his concussion. Sion Vaki is questionable with a groin. Kirby Joseph questionable with a knee. Aleem McNeil, who was taken into his probationary period for his practice window coming off of the PUP/IR list this week, may return this week, may not. We'll find out soon, but he is on his return. And then DJ Reed still on the IR with his hamstring injury. The Bengals obviously dealing with injuries of their own. We know that Joe Burrow not going to be playing anytime soon. Matt Lee is questionable with a knee injury. Charlie Jones questionable with an Achilles injury. Noah Fant questionable with a concussion. Dax Hill, which could be huge for the passing game if he's not able to go, is questionable with a knee. And then Shamar Stewart questionable with an ankle. The Bengals did lose to Minnesota 48-10 back a couple weeks ago, and then they also lost to the Denver Broncos 28-3, but they have beaten the Cleveland Browns 17-16 in a tight fought game at the beginning of the season, and then also took care of the Jacksonville Jaguars 31-27. That was the one home game that they had on the docket. As we know with the Lions, they dropped that game to the Packers in week one before dismantling the Bears in week two, taking care of the Ravens in convincing fashion in week three before absolutely dominating the Browns. So obviously leg up to the Lions here, but this game will be at Paycor Stadium, Cincinnati, Ohio. So the Who Day Bengal fans will absolutely be there. They will be loud. They will be looking to try and get back into the win column and stay undefeated at home. And they have all the faith in Jake Browning, not just as a team and teammates and coaches, but as a fan base as well. They believe Jake Browning can do what needs to be done until Joe Burrow is able to return. This is quite the setup for the Lions. I mean, this game isn't one that they should be too concerned about, but they don't want to use it as a trap game. You don't want to look ahead and see that you have the Chiefs coming up in your next week, then the Bucks after that, who have been playing great before you get back into NFC North play with the Vikings. You don't want to overlook the Bengals. But going into this game, you're on a three-game win streak. The Bengals aren't necessarily your biggest competition, so you could be talking about a four-game win streak heading into your matchup at Gaia Field at Arrowhead Stadium against the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and the rest of that crew. And it's Sunday night football, so that's always going to be prime time, amazing fun, and I think tons of people are going to enjoy it. And then you have the Buccaneers and the Vikings coming up following that. So there's an opportunity for you to walk away with a 7-game win streak coming off of your loss against the Packers before you play the Commanders and Eagles, which will be a stretch in its own right. So there's a ton coming up for the Lions, but obviously they should be taking it week by week, and this is a week that can continue to set that pace for them. I think the Ravens game was a tricky game for them that was thrown in between the Bears and the Browns, but now you have a chance to breathe as you play a Joe Burrow-less Bengals in preparation for the Chiefs and the Bucks to try and continue to show that you are the best team in the NFC North. At the moment, that's what they look like, but you know, it will come down to a lot. They're giving up 88 points on the year, 137 points for. They have the most points for in the NFC North. So only time will tell how great they're going to be. But I do believe that they will take down the Bengals in week 5. But when we come back from the break, we'll be talking Michigan and Michigan State. What's happening with the Wolverines and the Spartans on the gridiron this weekend? When more Mid Madness after the break on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time to talk about some college football. We'll start with the Michigan Wolverines this week before diving into the Spartans from East Lansing and Michigan State. Both teams are coming off of bye week, so not a ton to talk about the previous week. Obviously, both teams dove into themselves, took the time to work on the things they felt they needed to work on. With Michigan, it was a lot of getting to know each other as a team. It was a lot of how can we continue to make our offense explosive? How do we, you know, continue to dominate on the defensive end? Is our offensive line going to continue to get better? Because they have gotten better every single week. Obviously, Michigan has that tough loss a couple weeks ago to head coach Sharon Moore's alma mater in Oklahoma. But as they get into week 6, they're going to be taking on the Wisconsin Badgers. This game will be on WBCK. Actually, pregame starts as soon as I'm done running my mouth. So don't worry, you're going to get every opportunity to hear just how good the Michigan Wolverines are expecting to be moving forward after, honestly, attacking the bye week, as they say, and being able to come out of it victorious and feeling like they had success in getting better before their next opponent. Now, what's tough about their next opponent is they are playing the Wisconsin Badgers. As everybody knows, Wisconsin Badgers have one of the best run defenses in the entire country, not just the Big Ten, the entire country. What is Michigan known for? Running the football. So is it going to be hard for Michigan to run the football this weekend? Absolutely. Absolutely, it's going to be hard, because that's the one thing Wisconsin wants to stop is the run game, especially when you're playing Michigan. So what does that mean? That means Michigan needs to take advantage of the dual threat quarterback that they now have. Bryce Underwood can throw the ball almost better than any Michigan quarterback has ever been able to throw the ball. I mean, if you see the zip that comes out of his hands when he throws the ball, if you see the way he can float a pass and have the perfect touch on it, I mean, his deep ball, unreal. But he also has great accuracy when he's in the mid and the short game. He is a great pocket passer who also has the ability to extend plays with his legs or just flat out make fantastic plays on his feet. You have to take advantage of that. You have to put the Wisconsin Badgers into some sticky situations on the defensive end for them while you're taking advantage of all the threats you have offensively. You have a crazy two-headed monster in your backfield as far as running backs go. Justice Haynes has been phenomenal on the ground. There isn't a game this year outside of Oklahoma that he doesn't have 100 yards. There isn't a game this year that he hasn't scored a touchdown. He's done that every single game. Why not continue to feed him and let him be a monster? But then you remember, Justice Haynes is your speed back. He's getting outside the tackles. He wants to get to the outside, use that speed, burst through, and get to open space. And then they bring in a behemoth by the name of Jordan Marshall, who literally just wants to run between the tackles, drop his shoulder pads, and hit you in the mouth. He wants to run right over you, run right through you, and he wants you to feel him. He wants you to be forced to have to take him down by holding on to his legs as he runs you over. And that has always been the type of hard-nosed running that Michigan has liked from their running back. So when you have a tandem like that in the backfield, you still have Samaj Morgan on the outside. Donovan McCulley has been great as he's transferred over. And there's still more pieces that are continuing to evolve with this offense. So you have to, one, really take advantage of Bryce Underwood and what he has to offer you in this game as a dual threat quarterback that can throw the ball very well. And you have to allow your outside playmakers to make plays. Get the ball into Samaj Morgan's hands. Get the ball into Mason Klein's hands. Get the ball to Donovan McCulley. Let your receivers and tight ends dominate this game. So then when they start to back off and unload that box, there's not 7, 8, 9 guys sitting in the box and you can start to run the ball. Then Wisconsin will be in trouble because they won't have any answers for your offense. You'll be able to run the ball anywhere you want to and then turn around and throw the ball anywhere you want to, which means your biggest battle at that point is now defensively. And when does Michigan ever have a big battle on the defensive end? Their defense is the best part of this team. It's the carrying force of this team. Even in a game that they didn't play the best in against Oklahoma, they only gave up 24 points. The most points they've given up is 27 to Nebraska, and that was an interesting end to that game where the offense kind of stalled out and left the defense playing a ton. They're getting tired and had some uncharacteristic mistakes. So I think Michigan's in a great spot heading into this game with Wisconsin this weekend. Taking a look at the tail of the tape, Michigan's given an 89.2% chance to win the game, while just a 10.8% chance for Wisconsin to come out on top. Once again, this is at the Big House, Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor, noon. So the pregame show will start at 11 as soon as I am done talking. Michigan is 17.5-point favorites. The over-under sits at 43.5. Michigan's negative 1,000 on that money line, plus 600 for the Badgers. Danny O'Neill, 60 of 85 for 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 640 yards. Dylan Jones, 35 carries, 154 yards, and just one tutty. Lance Mason leads the receivers as a tight end, 14 receptions, 177 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Mason Rager has 2 sacks on the year, and Christian Allegro has 19 tackles on the year. They have a loss by 17 to Maryland, a 38-14 loss to Alabama, and then they have wins over Middle Tennessee State 42-10 and Miami, Ohio 17-0. We know what's happening on the Michigan end of things, so we won't roll through that. But I think Michigan has a fantastic chance to advance to 2-0 in the Big Ten, 4-1 on the year, and hopefully they get to move up in the rankings as they sit at 20 right now, the 20th ranked team in the country, hoping that some teams above them lose or have some very bad outputs to give them some jump. And now that we've gotten through the Wolverines and everything that's happening with the Maize and Blue in Ann Arbor, let's talk about Green and White, the Spartans up in East Lansing. Their last game was a 45-31 loss to USC, which was rough. It was a game that, well, they had opportunities in, they just couldn't quite cash. And I mean, your first loss being to a USC team that should have been ranked higher than 25 and that has continued to show that they're a good football team in the Big Ten, which is going to be one of the best conferences, if not the best conference in college football. I'm okay with that. You lose by 14, it happens. But most of it was a couple of small mental mistakes that I assume they addressed in the bye week to clean things up and get to a place where they want to be successful. Their biggest thing is defense. You know, giving up 40 points to Boston College, 24 to Youngstown State, 45 to USC. They really hammered things on the defensive end going into their bye week. They wanted the defense to feel like, hey, We believe in you. We trust you, but we need you to step up just a little bit more. We need to get teams off the field on third down. We need to get pressure generated on first and second down, get them behind the sticks, and force those third and long scenarios to make it easy for us to be successful. At the moment, the Spartans defense has not done that, but they're going into a game with Nebraska this weekend that gives them more than enough opportunity to get in on that, because Nebraska doesn't like to run the ball as much as other teams. With Dylan Raiola back there, they want to throw the ball. So pressure, pressure, pressure. Can they get sacks? Can they hurry the quarterback? Can they get pressures? Can they force incompletions? Can they bat balls down at the line of scrimmage? That is where this game will be won. Can they get coverage sacks? How good can the coverage be on the back end with this secondary to allow your front, you know, your front four or five that you're sending in pressure to get to the quarterback? A lot of times in college football, those quarterbacks have time and time and time because the front seven, front four, five, six, however many are there, can't get to the quarterback, and then the coverage isn't good enough on the back end. Michigan State going to be asking a ton of their secondary in this game because Dylan Raiola will throw the ball. As you saw against Michigan, Dylan Raiola will throw the ball. Nebraska throws the ball. That's honestly, the only thing Nebraska really tries to do is throw the ball. Not because they don't have a good running back, not because they don't have the offensive line to do it, but because they have a fantastically skilled quarterback and great receivers, decent tight ends, pass-catching backs. Why wouldn't you throw the ball? It doesn't make sense for Nebraska not to throw the ball. So the key to victory for Michigan State this week is to go out and have a great game in the defensive backfield. Those safeties and corners have to play well in the coverage game to allow the front, you know, six guys to get pressure in on Dylan Raiola, get some sacks, create some pressures, hurries, and really force the issue with him throwing the ball. Looking at how things will spare out in this game, Michigan State only has a 14% chance to win, 86% chance for Nebraska. Nebraska's 11.5-point favorites, -450 on the money line. Just a +340 for the Spartans, though. So they are expecting them to go into Memorial Stadium and possibly give Nebraska a game or even come out on top, because +340 is not terrible odds. Nebraska suffered their first loss and their first Big Ten loss of the year to Michigan. And obviously on the flip side, it was USC for the Spartans. This game is at 4 p.m. tomorrow, FS1. So I believe that's a 3 p.m. start for them over in Lincoln, Nebraska. So this game will be interesting to watch. This, I think, will tell the tale for one of these two teams. The team that loses, I think, kind of starts a downward trend and is going to struggle in the Big Ten, while the team that wins might just be able to catapult themselves into that middle ground and then maybe even the lower end of the top half of teams in the Big Ten. I mean, when you look at it, obviously Indiana, Oregon, Maryland, Ohio State have all been fantastic so far in their years, as they're all undefeated. They're still undefeated in conference play. Michigan and Minnesota also undefeated in conference play. USC has the one conference loss, but man, have they played fantastic football week in and week out. So they're going to be a tough team to beat. As we know, Illinois had a good bounce back last week after losing to Indiana in embarrassing fashion. So Michigan State has a chance to plop themselves right in that category with USC, Illinois, Iowa, Northwestern, that middle of the pack team, and maybe even find themselves amongst the Michigan, Minnesota, Maryland's of the conference if they continue to have that success. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the Detroit Tigers and what's happening in postseason of baseball on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to talk about the Detroit Tigers and what's happening in playoff baseball. As we know, the playoffs got started earlier this week with the American League wild card, which, first off, the Tigers did a horrible job at closing out the regular season. They lost five straight series, ended up losing the American League Central after being up 15 and a half games, something that has never been done in MLB history before. And they also lost the AL Central after being up 10 games heading into September, something else that has never been done in MLB history. But they did manage to get some help from the Rangers out in the National League, and they also got some help from themselves as they were able to take down the Red Sox in a couple games, or they were able to take down the Red Sox in one game last week, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, in their series, and that gave them the chance to berth into the playoffs. What sucked was they ended up playing American League rival the Cleveland Guardians in the wild card, a three-game wild card. All three games were down at Progressive Field in Cleveland, and it was an uphill battle, as everyone expected. These two teams know each other very well, and it played out that way, and things played out to the success of the Detroit Tigers. Game one was fantastic. Tarik Skubal was on the mound and was unbelievable. Unbelievable from this game. He 7.2 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 14 strikeouts. That ties a Tigers postseason record. Only walked 3. Tigers scored 1 in the first, and then Skubal gave up the 1 run in the 4th. The Tigers popped another in the 7th and were able to close that game out 2-1 as Vest got yet another save on the season. Then things got muddy in game two. Muddy in game two. I mean, first off, Casey Mize didn't have a great game. He only pitched a couple of innings. Actually, he didn't even pitch enough innings to gain a loss in this game. Cleveland scored in the first inning, and then the Tigers scored in the 4th, and then it was the bottom of the 8th that was the problem for the Tigers. They gave up a 5-run inning to the Guardians. And then that late in the game, you can't afford to give up 5 runs and think you're going to get it back at the top of the 9th. That's insane baseball. The Tigers dropped that one. It was a tough, tough battle for them. And then it forced us into a mandatory game 3, which nobody ever wants to play in the wild card series, but sometimes you have to. And the Tigers took full advantage of this opportunity. They came out and they put Jack Flaherty on the mound, and then Finnegan came in for him in relief before a couple other pitchers also pitched at the end of this game. They got 1 run in the 3rd, then the Guardians tied the game up at 1 in the 4th. The Tigers got another in the 6th to pull ahead, and then 4 more in the top of the 7th before giving up 2 in the bottom of the 8th and closing things out for a 6-3 victory. Gleyber Torres had a hit, RBI from Kerry Carpenter. Torkelson also had an RBI on the day. Perez had 2 RBIs. Green and Dingler also cash in on the day as well. Javi Baez has a hit in 7 straight games as he's starting to play his best baseball at the end of the season. Flaherty went 4.2 innings, 3 hits, 1 run that was earned, and then 2 walks on 4 strikeouts. He's done a fantastic job getting them into the next round. Now, the next round, as the playoffs shape themselves out, the Tigers will be taking on the 2-seeded Mariners. The 1-seeded Blue Jays have the Yankees. That's the AL side. On the NL side, the 2-seeded Dodgers or 2-seeded Phillies will take on the 3-seeded Dodgers, while the 1-seeded Brewers will take on the Cubs. The Tigers series, as we know it, I'm pulling up this full schedule so we'll know when these games are expected to be played. October 4th, later tonight, 8:38, first pitch on FS1 against Seattle. And then tomorrow, they'll play 8:03 p.m. on FS1 in Seattle. Then the next two games will be Tuesday, Wednesday, giving that Monday day for travel. Times are to be determined for those games at Comerica Park. And then a possible game five, if necessary. Well, technically game four is if necessary as well, will be on October 10th in Seattle. And that time is to be determined as well. There is no idea who will be pitching for either one of these teams in these matchups. I guess we'll find out in the coming moments. As you guys know, I record this on Friday, so that information hasn't been quite given out yet, but I'm sure we'll find out later on Friday, or even we won't find out until Saturday morning as you're listening to this. So the Tigers have quite the uphill battle for them against the Seattle Mariners. I'm going to go back to that Tigers full schedule for the first half. When they first played Seattle, the Tigers went up. They won that series 2-1 in Seattle. A 9-6 win for Holton, a 4-1 win for Mize, and then a 3-2 loss for Scooble in game three of that series. And then they played Seattle again to end out the first half of the season, and it was a sweep. They lost 12-3. To the hands of Castillo in game one, 15-7 to the hands of Kirby in game two, and then 8-4 to the hands of Brash in game three. I do not believe the Tigers played the Mariners in the second half of the season. They did not. So the Mariners won that regular season 4-2. Uphill battle in its own right. The Mariners have been one of the best hitting teams in all of baseball, and then they have the extra swag of having Ichiro Suzuki playing in their intra-squad scrimmage while they wait the winner of the ALCS or AL wildcard. Excuse me? It's going to be tough. They have all the momentum on the side, but what the Detroit Tigers have on their side is that they're still playing baseball, and they just came off of playing baseball. Obviously, you can simulate as much as you would like, but simulations are nowhere near playing the actual game. So the Tigers have that momentum of playing and coming off of a hard-fought series against a divisional rival that was full of emotion and that they were able to come out successful in. They haven't been to the ALCS in years. So they're looking to get back to the ALCS since, I believe, 2013, but don't mark me on that. It may be a little bit farther back than that. They haven't been to the AL Divisional Series in a handful of years as well, so they're just excited to be back here. Tarik Skubal has been killing it, and he's also been a fantastic leader. When they said, hey, we're going with Mize in game two, he was like, look, Casey Mize is that dude. And if you don't think I believe in Casey Mize, you are crazy. Let's go out there. Let's win us another one while Casey does his thing, and we can get on out of here and get ready for Seattle. Obviously, that didn't happen, but he has that same type of confidence in the entire bullpen and in his hitters and defense behind him. He is the ace of this team. He knows he's the ace of this team, and he's looking to continue having an AL Cy Young type season, which he may be winning his second straight AL Cy Young. He has to be in the running for the AL MVP, and he's showcasing that in the playoffs. The tough thing is we won't know what's going to happen, and we won't speak again until maybe this series is over. So do everything you can to be cheering for the Detroit Tigers. Give them all the love you can. Give them that good energy because they're going to need it. Most importantly, the bats have to get going. They struggled against Cleveland. They cannot struggle against the Seattle Mariners. We're going to get back from the break, and we're going to get into our picks. One of the most exciting parts of the show. After the break, with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
WBCK.
Back in the Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. It's time for us to get into the picks, my favorite part of the show. Well, sometimes, because when I have a week like I had last week, it's not always fun. Talking about last week, I had a 2-4 week last week. Georgia couldn't quite beat Alabama. USC couldn't beat Illinois. LSU couldn't beat Ole Miss. The Ravens, they did what they do against the Chiefs. But I can always hang on Oregon to beat Penn State, and then the Eagles were able to take down the Bucks. 2-4 gives me up to 21-15 on the year. I am still 6 games above 500, so I'm doing just good enough. A good 6-0 week to give me 12 games over would be fantastic, but we'll see what's going to happen. We have a loaded football weekend and even a little mixture of WNBA thrown in there this week. We'll start on the college gridiron, because why wouldn't we, right? We'll start with my old man, Jacob Harrison, who I miss so much. Wish he was here to banter back and forth about sports with me, because doing this alone sometimes isn't always the most fun. His favorite college football team, the Alabama Crimson Tide, also his alma mater, will be taking on the Vanderbilt Commodores. Vanderbilt, 5-0 on the year, 1-0 in the SEC, the 16th-ranked team in the country, taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide, 3-1 on the year, 1-0 in the SEC. They're ranked 10th in the country. 3:30 p.m. later today on ABC is this game. A 25.7% chance for Vandy to come out with the quote-unquote upset. And then 74.3% chance for Alabama to win this game. This game will be at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Bama comes in as 10.5-point favorites. 55.5 sits on the over-under for this game. And negative 425 on the money line for Bama. Plus 320 for Vanderbilt, though. As we know with Bama, they're led by Ty Simpson, who 88 for 127, 11 tutties on 1,138 passing yards. And then they have Kevin Riley on the ground, 150 yards on 33 carries. Jeremy Bernard, 20 receptions, 4 touchdowns on 310 yards. LT Overton was 1.5 sacks. And Bray Hubbard leads the team with 17 tackles. On the other side, Vanderbilt has continued to be impressive after the season that they had last year. Diego Pavia, 94 of 126 for 1,211 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, and just 3 interceptions. He's also great on the ground. He's got 48 carries for 294 yards and 2 tutties. Eli Stowers is 301 receiving yards on 22 receptions and 2 touchdowns. Miles Capers, 3.5 sacks leading the Commodores. And C.J. Hurd has 23 tackles. They have a 55-35 victory over Utah State, a 70-21 shellacking of Georgia State, a 31-7 victory over South Carolina, and then a 44-20 victory over Virginia Tech. And they started things beating the Charleston Southern Buccaneers 45-3. On the flip side, Bama lost to FSU to open the year 31-17 before walking all over Louisiana Monroe 73-0. Took care of Wisconsin on the road or at home 34-18, and then went on the road to take down Georgia 24-21. So the Crimson Tide are just about rolling at this moment. And I know this is going to be a close game. I know Vandy has it in them to be competitive in this game. They're 1-0 in the SEC for a reason. They're 5-0 in the year. They're ranked 16th in the country for a reason. This is not the Vanderbilt football we're used to. It's not the Bama football we're used to. But we're still talking about Alabama and Vanderbilt. We're still talking about programs that are at different spaces in their existence. And I'm going to have to go with Ty Simpson and Alabama as they continue to step into who they are as a team. And I don't think Vanderbilt has enough to win this game on the road. This game being played in Tennessee might be completely different. But with this game being played down in Tuscaloosa, I've got to go with the Crimson Tide. It's going to get us over into the Big 12 for our next game. The unranked Houston Cougars, who are 4-0 and 1-0 in the Big 12, are playing host to the number 11 Texas Tech Red Raiders, who are 4-0, 1-0 in the Big 12. A 7 p.m. start on ESPN for this game. Texas Tech has a 74.5% chance to win the game. Houston has a 25.5% chance to win this game. This game will be at TDECU Stadium in Houston, Texas. Houston is led by Connor Wegman, 65 of 106 for 6 touchdowns and an interception, 839 passing yards. They have Dean Connors on the ground, 67 carries for 3 touchdowns and 324 rushing yards. Stephen Johnson, 8 receptions, 2 touchdowns, 235 receiving yards. Corey Platt Jr., 2.5 sacks, and Carlos Allen Jr. leads with 30 tackles. Meanwhile, Texas Tech, who has looked phenomenal to start out the year, has Baron Morton at quarterback, 69 of 100 for 11 touchdowns, 1,065 yards, and 3 interceptions. Cameron Dickey, 50 carries, 6 touchdowns, 232 rushing yards. Coy Eakin leads the receivers, 14 receptions, 260 yards, and 3 touchdowns. David Bailey, 3.5 sacks, and Jacob Rodriguez, 28 tackles. Texas Tech, perfect 4-0 on the year. Started things with the Pine Bluff Golden Lions out of Arkansas, 67-7 win there. Then they took care of Kent State. The Golden Flashes lost that game 62-14. Oregon State Beavers drop 45-14 to the hands of the Raiders. And then the Red Raiders took care of the Utes from Utah 34-10. They're 1-0 in that Big 12. Meanwhile, on the opposite side, starting things with Stephen F. Austin, a 27-0 victory for the Cougars. Then they took care of Rice 35-9. The Owls, not enough there. Then the Buffaloes drop to the Cougars 36-20. And then Oregon State 27-24. That common opponent, a three-point overtime victory for Houston is not enough for me to give them even a closeness in this game. I thought it might be a little bit closer looking at records and such. But at the moment, Texas Tech is 11.5-point underdog or favorite. 52.5 sits on the over-under. -500 on the money line for Texas Tech and a +360 for the Cougars. I've got Texas Tech coming out victorious in this game. We got another game on the college gridiron, this time in the ACC. The third-ranked Miami Hurricanes, not traveling far this weekend as they will stay in the state of Florida, will take on the 18th-ranked Florida State Seminoles. A 7:30 p.m. kickoff on ABC, 65.3% chance for Miami, a 34.7% chance for Florida State. The Seminoles will be playing host at Doak Campbell Stadium in Tallahassee, Florida. 4.5-point favorites for the Hurricanes, 54.5 on the over-under, -185 on the money line, but it's a +155 for the Seminoles, who are led by Tommy Castellanos and then Gavin Sawchuk as a running back. Deuce Robinson leading things in the reception game for them. Ashlyn Barker with 2 sacks, and Earl Little Jr. leads them tackles with 28. Carson Beck has come to Miami and given them a boost, even though they were playing great under Cam Ward. They also have Mark Fletcher Jr. as running back, Malachi Toney leading the receivers, Akeem Messidor with 2.5 sacks, and Reuben Bain Jr. has 22 sacks on the year. Miami beat Notre Dame by 3. Took care of Bethune-Cookman 45-3, beat USF 49-12 before taking care of Florida 26-7. I mean, they dominated the state of Florida so far. Will it change? Florida State definitely wants to say something about that. They beat Alabama to open the year 31-17 and then had East Texas A&M 77-3. No questions there. Took care of Kent State 66-10 before dropping a double overtime game to Virginia, one that will sting. They will try and bounce back, but I'm not sure they're going to have enough to win this game at home, especially with Carson Beck coming into town and being as good as he has been so far this year. I'm going to take Miami to win this game as well. That gets our last college game in the Big Ten. Michigan State Spartans, who are 3-1, 0-1 in the Big Ten, will take on the Nebraska Cornhuskers, 3-1, 0-1 in the Big Ten. It's an FS1 game, 4 p.m. kickoff, 14% for Michigan State, 86 for Nebraska. We talked about this game a little bit earlier. I do think it's up and down. I do think it's going to be close. And I'm going out on a limb here, but I'm going to take Michigan State to win this game. It may come back to bite me, but I really like what the Spartans have put together so far. Aiden Childs, Makai Frazier, Amari Kelly, and the rest of this offense has been phenomenal. It's Jordan Hall, who leads both sacks and tackles for this team, that's going to need some help on the defensive end to be successful in this game. I think he just may get enough of it to get it done in this game against Dylan Raiola and the rest of Nebraska. I'm taking the Michigan State Spartans to win down in a hostile environment in Lincoln, Nebraska. That takes us over to the NFL, not leaving the gridiron just yet. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 3-1. They're 2-0 on the road. They're going to take on the Seattle Seahawks, 3-1, who are 1-1 at home. 4:05 kickoff tomorrow on CBS. 45.9% chance for Tampa Bay, 53.7% chance for Seattle. Seattle is 3.5-point favorites, 44.5 sits on the over-under, -195 on the money line for Seattle, but a +165 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Baker Mayfield, Bucky Irvin, Emeka Egbuka, and the rest of the offense will look to see what they can do against Seattle's defense in that 12th man. Meanwhile, Sam Darnold, Kenneth Walker III, Jackson Smith, and Jigba going to look to do everything they can to have some success on their side as well. Mike Evans still expected to be out for the Buccaneers. DeMarcus Lawrence, Julian Love, and Devin Witherspoon all expected to maybe be out for the Seattle Seahawks. That's going to make this game a little bit tougher for Seattle. Buccaneers, their one loss is by the hands of Philadelphia. The Eagles, honestly, the number one team in the NFL right now. The loss for the Seahawks at the hand of the 49ers, 17-13. I like the Seahawks, but I don't like them more than Baker Mayfield and the Bucs. I'm going to take the Bucs to win this game and be the only 4-1 team coming out of that matchup. That's going to get us into our last matchup of the week. It is Mercury and Aces game two. A ton can happen. The first game will be in Phoenix. We know Satu Sabali has been great for Phoenix. We know Aja Wilson has been great for the Aces. No injuries on either side. 3 p.m. tip-off on ABC and ESPN tomorrow. This is game two of the series. I think the Mercury win game one, so I'm taking the Aces to win game two, regardless of what happens, because it's either a chance for them to win the WNBA Finals or it's a chance for them to extend. So I think that they have to win at home in their second game to either end their season or keep their season going with success. We obviously have the Michigan game playing. As soon as I'm done talking here at 11, pregame starts. That game kicks off at noon. And then we have Sunday night football tomorrow, which is going to be, give me just a second to find that. I should have it on doc. I know. Sunday night football is going to be the Patriots and Bills on NBC. Also going to be played here on WBCK. And then we have Chiefs and Jaguars on Monday for Monday night football. My picks, Bama, Miami, the Buccaneers, the Aces, Michigan State, and Texas Tech. I hope that you guys have just as fun of a weekend as I'm going to have. And we'll be back next week with more Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.